Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C.
Continue to protest. We're going to continue on the civil disobedience. Professionals are going to continue their strikes until restoration of a full civilian government.
Sudanese protest against the military takeover of the transitional government.
There is a wave in Mali which we could qualify as populist, which accused the political class of all the problems of Mali and even makes believe that the real power is in the military institutions.
Pro-junta supporters protest in Mali's capital Bamako over what they say is foreign interference by the regional bloc ECOWAS and France.
You know, we are one human race. You know, we may be different culturally and racially, but we are still one humanity with the same feelings and wants and needs as anybody else.
And Cracker is a new movie that imagines a world where whites are enslaved by black people. We'll have details, those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In Sudan, thousands of protesters have denounced this man's coup as they marched through several parts of the capital, Khartoum, Saturday. With some shouting no to military rule, the protesters marched in support of Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok's transitional government deposed by the military. This despite the deployment of soldiers and armed security officers in Khartoum. Coup leader General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan defended his action, saying it was necessary to prevent a civil war. But the protesters demand that he and his officers step down. The military shut down the internet and telecommunications following the takeover, a situation that protest organizers say is continuing in spite of the backlash and international condemnation. Wala Salah is a human rights lawyer and activist who is participating in the protest in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. She tells me that the protest will continue until the military junta steps down for a civilian administration to take over the reins of government.
Indeed, I see people everywhere from each direction, thousands of young people, women, old men, children, everyone. Khartoum is, the entire city is outside protesting, calling for the fall of the military rule, calling for the fall of the coup, calling for the end of this partnership. People are, chanting against the military. They're chanting against Egypt and Sisi. They're chanting against UAE and every supporter of this move.
But the internet is still shut down, I understand, correct?
Exactly. Internet and mobile communication, the entire mobile communication system. So we can't call or text. We have no idea what's going on the other side of the city. We get information from people abroad. So people abroad would call us on our phones. And this is the only way we understand what's going on around us.
I understand some civil society groups and opposition groups are calling for the international community to put pressure on the military government to step down. Is this what some of the protesters are saying?
I think what the protesters are saying, that they own the streets and they own this country and they are able to put pressure on the military coup. I have no idea who is Burhan going to rule, because this country, everyone is outside, everyone is against it. I think there is no population that he will be able to rule. So it's not even about putting pressure. I think it's just not realistic and not possible for them to rule. We want the junta out of the picture. We've experienced this partnership for the past 2 years, and the result has been nothing but death, pain, and sorrow for the Sudanese people. We want the military out of this picture, totally. A full civilian government.
So do they want the restoration of Hamdok's government that was recently disbanded by the military?
I can't hear anyone calling for Hamdok. I think it's not about names. It's not about Hamdok. It's not about who's going to rule. I think what people are united around now is that they don't want the military. They don't want to go back the junta to be in the picture. They want a full civilian government, and they want a government that represents them. Yeah, so it's about a civilian government that represents the masses on the street.
Ahead of this protest, there was a deployment of military and plainclothes security officers. Are you seeing that military or security officers around?
No, I don't see any security presence. I know that they blocked some of the roads, but not on where I am. Where I am, there is no security presence at all. It's hundreds of thousands of people. More than 2 million. So I hear estimation here that more than 2 million are on the road that I'm in.
So how long will this protest continue? How long do you think this protest will continue?
We have no idea. We're going to continue to protest. We're going to continue on the civil disobedience. Professionals are going to continue their strike until restoration and of a full civilian government.
Wala Salah is a human rights lawyer and activist. She spoke with me from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. Mali, supporters of the transitional government went to the streets to protest against what they say is interference by France and by the regional bloc, the Economic Community of West African States, or ECOWAS. The protest on Friday came days after the transitional government in Bamako expelled the regional bloc's envoy. Hamidou Boly was given 72 hours to leave Mali after he was accused of actions incompatible with his status, which included meetings with groups whose actions officials say are hostile to the transitional government. This as ECOWAS pressures the government to keep its commitment to organize presidential and parliamentary elections in February next year to return Mali to constitutional rule. But the transitional government says it will only announce the date for the elections after national consultations scheduled for December. For more about the protest and latest developments, I read security and political analyst Bokar Sangari in the Malian capital, Bamako.
This protest takes place in a context where there is an intense debate on the extension of the transition in Mali, which was supposed to last 18 months. Obviously, nothing is ready to go to election in February 2022. And Prime Minister Choguel Maïga seems to have decided to refer all discussions to the national meeting, Les Assises Nationales, scheduled for December, including the issue of political and institutional reforms.
Boka, why are people saying that ECOWAS is interfering in what is happening in Mali?
The position of ECOWAS is that the militaries in power in Bamako must respect their engagement made to the international community. However, for the Malian transitional authorities, they must take the time to carry out the necessary reforms to prepare for the elections so that the transition cannot end up with contested election in 20 and 22. This is a position that was defended by many observers at the beginning of the transition, for whom lessons must be learned from the 2013 transition, where under the pressure from the international community, Mali rushed towards elections. It should be added that since the start of this transition, there has been an expression of a desire to show the partners, in particular ECOWAS, that Malians wants to take charge their affairs, and that they do not want to receive directives from the international community, which is also not exempt from blame.
Bokar, some people are suggesting that maybe some officials in the transitional government organized this protest, because this protest comes days after the military transitional government expelled the ECOWAS envoy. What is your take?
What I said does not mean that there is a unanimity around extending the transition, and there is an important part of the political class which is opposed and which even thinks that the meeting envisaged in December are not opportune, and it is obvious that the strategy of the military junta in power in Bamako is to impose the prorogation of the transition by the population, including with opportunistic tactics which consist in affording the services of young people who have influence and capacity for mobilization in Bamako, like Ben Le Cerveau of Yerewolo, who is also very close to the military in power in Bamako. There is also an important religious leader like Sheriff De Nyoro, a spiritual leader of the Hamalist movement, a Sufi movement, which even asked that we give 2 or 3 more years to the militaries. But he was still very critical of the coup leaders after the coup, and has since changed language. I cannot forget the repression, in particular on the judicial level, which falls on any person who expressed opinions contrary to the one currently defending the transition in Mali.
So when do Malians think the transitional government will make a firm decision on when it will hand over power after it organizes elections, so Mali will return to constitutional rule?
It is difficult to say when the election is supposed to end. The transition will take place. The Malian transitional authorities have decided that all this will be discussed during the national dialogue scheduled for December. And there is a wave in Mali which we could qualify as populist, which accused the political class of all the problems of Mali, and even makes believe that the real power is in the military institutions.
Bukar Sangare is a security and political analyst. He spoke with me from the Malian capital, Bamako. In Sierra Leone, President Julius Maada Bio says the Attorney General will soon propose a constitutional amendment to Parliament for consideration. The dual nationality bill will pave way for Sierra Leoneans abroad who have become naturalized citizens of other countries to compete in parliamentary and local elections. Political parties often refuse to field candidates who have dual nationality. Sierra Leoneans in the diaspora routinely say they should not be barred from competing in polls that will enable them to contribute to the country's development. This, despite a Supreme Court ruling that stated that dual citizens are allowed to participate in legislative contests. Sierra Leonean Information Minister Mohamed Rahman Suarez says the constitutional amendment proposal is the fulfillment of one of President Bio's campaign promises made before he became leader of the West African country. He tells me that the dual nationality measure enjoys a groundswell of support from citizens.
This was a firm manifesto commitment by then-retired Brigadier Julius Maada Bio when he was a presidential candidate of the then-opposition Sierra Leone People's Party. He noted that dual citizens play an important role in national development. They contribute to families. They have investments here. They have expertise. They have experiences to share, and committed that once he became president of Sierra Leone, will ensure that the appropriate legislation is revisited to encourage dual citizens to participate in politics, including becoming members of parliament. This has been a long-running battle, dating decades. So, again, President Bio has dared where others have feared. He has been bold and audacious about this, in the same way he was about the repeal of the criminal libel law, about the abolition of the death penalty, about the gender empowerment and mainstreaming bill, amongst others.
Does that mean that the government is seeking a constitutional amendment
that allows dual nationality, permitting Sierra Leone nationals with double nationality to run as members of parliament?
Yes, Peter. What cabinet did yesterday under the chairmanship of His Excellency President Bill was to grant the Attorney General the fiat to develop the enabling legislation and present before parliament for enactment. It's important to note that this is not an entrenched clause. It does not require a referendum. It can be amended by simple parliamentary majority. So it's very much on course.
Well, how does this dovetail into the Supreme Court's decision in September that dual citizens are allowed to run for parliament after a suit brought by lawmaker Kande Yomkela, who was one of the opposition presidential candidates during the recent or last general election?
Peter, I've just been advised that even though judicial precedents form an important part of a constitution, they nonetheless do not change the constitution. The process we have gone through, cabinet approval and subsequent parliamentary enactment, is the true and proper way to effect constitutional amendments of this nature. So we are firmly on course.
When will the Attorney General officially go to Parliament to table this bill? And when do you think Parliament will take it up to make it a reality?
The enactment of this dual citizenship legislation is part of the legislative program of government for this year. So it's already work in progress. I'm pretty confident that before the end of this year, we would have enacted the dual citizenship law in Sierra Leone, opening the door for Sierra Leoneans residing in the diaspora to participate fully in the political process in Sierra Leone.
Mohammed, what do you say to those who are concerned that this amendment will pave way for those in the diaspora to come home to take up opportunities that the locals have been clamoring for, and that those from outside have the financial muscle that the locals might not necessarily have, thereby taking advantage of the situation? How will your government address this concern?
Peter, I've heard these arguments before. It's quite a very debatable thing. The diasporans who might be interested in running for parliament will not only be coming with money bags, they'll also be coming with ideas, they'll also be coming with experiences. They will be wanting to associate with the overall development process. Having said that, I am also aware that Sierra Leonean electorates are a lot wiser than many people take them for. I mean, we have seen elections come and go. The most moneyed people have ended up losing those elections because the electorate clearly know who stands for them, who lives with them, who understands their challenges, and who is the best fit to solve their problems. So we should not take them for granted.
Mohammed Rahman Souare is the Sierra Leonean Information Minister. He spoke with me from the capital, Freetown. In the Gambia, executives of the Opposition Alliance for Patriotic Reorientation and Construction, or APRC, have rejected their dismissal by former President Yahya Jammeh, who is the group's supreme leader. The former president dismissed the leaders of the APRC after they formed an alliance with incumbent President Adama Barrow ahead of the upcoming December 4 presidential election. He has since announced a new interim executive and asked them to form an alliance with another party before the presidential poll. Analysts say the confusion in the APRC will split the party and complicate incumbent President Barrow's re-election prospect. Dudu Jah is the executive secretary and deputy secretary of the Gambian Opposition Alliance for Patriotic Reorientation and Construction, or APRC. He tells me that the former president does not have the power and the legal standing to dismiss the executives of the party, who he contends have been legitimately elected in accordance with the country's constitution.
The electoral laws of the Gambia says every political party must hold a party congress every 2 years, biennial congress. And the party has a constitution, and our constitution also states that congress is highest authority. So no single individual or a group has any powers or authority to dissolve an entire executive unless Congress says so. So based on these reasons, he has no authority to dismiss the national executive. And again, whenever we organize Congress, we write to the IEC, they come and attend to witness the party congresses. We submit a list to them to tell them that these are the people in charge of the party for the next 2 years. And him as our Supreme Party leader is an honorary title, which is not inscripted in our constitution. And his name is not on the list of executive members submitted at the Independent Electoral Commission. And due to the fact that the electoral laws 2015 said no political party shall have an executive member who is not resident in this country. And as we speak, he is not in the country. And if his name was submitted, the party could be banned or suspended by the Independent Electoral Commission because those powers are vested in them.
So are you saying that the agreement that you entered into with incumbent President Adama Barrow ahead of the elections still stands?
Yes, nothing has changed in that. That's not only the executive decision, but the party structures as well. It took us a very long time as executive members to constructively debate amongst ourselves. If you agree and say yes, what are the reasons saying yes? If you say no and object to that alliance, what are your reasons? And out of 52 executive members, only two have said no. That is less than 4%. The rest have agreed to this alliance. And besides that, we did a countrywide tour. Every region we went held a consultative meeting with our stakeholders and the grassroots membership. And out of which each constituency, like 10 people would represent them, we presented about the alliance, the proposed alliance to them, after which they asked questions and make queries whether they accept or not. We went around the country and every place we've gone to, all the regional chairpersons, the executive and the constituency people have endorsed this alliance with the NPP.
Former President Yahya Jammeh is the supreme leader of your party. He made a declaration dissolving the leadership. Don't you think that by so doing, both the party is divided and your supporters will be confused ahead of the elections?
Yes, he's the supreme party leader, an honorary title that we gave him. So he does not have the authority to sack people. The executive, that power resides in the executive. And his statement coming out in the open, addressing people, has actually divided the party. But those on that other side, legally, they cannot be recognized in this country. They cannot make any alliance or to put up a candidate under the name APRC.
Where do you go from here? Now, how do you repair the party ahead of the elections?
Well, when it comes to alliances, it's always difficult to have 100% on board. No matter what party you go into alliance with, you'll have members of your party who said, we don't like that party, or we don't want to go with that leader. That is but natural. You cannot have 100% of everybody coming on board to join you on that alliance. But we're very focused on spot meetings. That is going out to communities, meeting people, discussing with them, and enlightening them more. And more people are being awakened by that. But there are people in that No to Alliance, no matter what you say or do, they are going down the drain saying no to alliance. So not much we can do, but we're moving ahead with the alliance and we're very certain that victory will be ours come December 1st.
Have you communicated this stance officially to the former president?
He has cut the lines of communication several months ago. If somebody doesn't want to talk to you, you cannot force that through. And I believe these were the reasons why he never wanted to communicate. And he has made up his mind. We'll assume that that was the case because no genuine reason has been given for lack of communication. But this party does not belong to an individual. It's a party of Gambians, and we all have rights to it. One party, one person cannot just say, jump, and we say, how high are we going to jump? Political parties don't function that way. Even if that is the case, then the party does not have a strong footing, and where it heads to, it's not going to go far, because it is against the laws of this country. And like I said, the laws of the land are supreme and nobody is above that.
Dudu Jah is the Executive Secretary and Deputy Secretary of the Gambian Opposition Alliance for Patriotic Reorientation and Construction, or APRC. He spoke with me from the Gambian capital, Banjul.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Claudine, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, in the Republic of the Congo, the Anti-Kleptocracy Strategy, a civil society group, is calling on the international community to investigate and impose sanctions on public officials involved in the embezzlement of public funds. This after the group says its investigations have uncovered the property and assets of public officials in Western countries and in the Middle East. The Anti-Kleptocracy Strategy Group, which works closely with C4ADS, an international non-partisan NGO that provides data-driven analysis on global conflict and transnational security issues, says it is ready to provide the evidence to the international community to act. But critics have accused the civil society group of being agent of the West with the sole objective of demonizing and embarrassing senior government officials to make them unpopular. They describe members of the group as unpatriotic and challenge them to present their findings to the appropriate authorities in Brazzaville instead of creating sensationalism and media attention just to stay relevant. Andrea Ngombe is the founder and director of Sasufi Collective, a part of the Anti-Kleptocracy Strategy Group and a fellow of the National Endowment for Democracy. He tells me that his group is prepared to hand over its findings to the international community and to all anti-corruption crusader organizations in the Congo Republic.
We find about $32 million asset owned by the family and the entourage of the Sassou Nguesso family. But most important thing we find is that the asset they used to own in Western cities such as Miami or even France and wherever, has been quietly and slowly sold, and they transferred their property and asset in Dubai. And in our report, we see that the apartment, the condo sales in Miami, financed the acquisition of very expensive things in Dubai. And also, we have been able to have new names because we used to have just the Sassou Nguesso family directly, but within the report, we have been able to track down the Minister of Interior, Mr. Zéphirin Raymond Boulou, who owns five properties in Dubai.
Some people are suggesting that this poses a security risk, not only to you, but to your family. Is that a true reflection of what is happening?
Yes, and I myself being in exile, and most of the members of my family are now out of the country. The threat comes because they don't want us to expose how corrupt they are and how they are looting the country for their own expense. Because when you denounce their corruption, they call you anti-patriotic guys, and they also put out all sorts of mean disinformation that you work for you are kind of foreign agent.
But what do you say to those who are of the opinion that calling on the international community to investigate what you described as corruption is unpatriotic, it's trying to create sensationalism? How do you respond to that?
We have a successful collective are working to have sanction against those corrupted people who are stealing the Congolese. And also, we also call to any independent judge in Congo to step up for the law and for the country, because they are not in charge because of any president. They are in charge for the people. So they need to read the law and enforce the law. When you discover that one of the men who is suspected to have been the initiator of the 1997 war in Congo is still in charge, still in post, and having property in Dubai, it's not fair. It's not fair. Not for the international community, but it is not fair for the Congolese people suffering. When you see that one of the top moguls in telecom is having many companies and what we call a kind of exile, fiscal exile in in Dubai. He is stealing from the Congolese client he has on Azure Telecom and many more companies he got. So we are not just looking for sensationalism. We are looking for what we call rule of law and accountability. It's really, we are trying really to trigger a kind of consciousness of accountability amongst our people.
Have you submitted this to some Western authorities that you're calling to investigate some of these instances? And how credible is your information, by the way?
Our information are really solid. We work with C4RDS, which is an American-based NGO, really serious about the information we publish. We have all the documents to support our claims inside the report. And as I already mentioned, we are in the process to submit Magnitsky sanction against those people and looking forward to work with any independent justice, even the Congolese justice, if they want. We have all the documents at their disposal to enforce our laws and all the treaties signed by Congo about fighting corruption and also money laundering.
Andrea Ngombert is the founder and director of Sasufi Collective, a part of the Anti-Kleptocracy Strategy Group and a fellow of the National Endowment for Democracy. He spoke with me from the French capital, Paris. Hakim Kai Kazim is the lead actor in a newly released movie, Cracker. Producers of the movie say it focuses on racial dynamics with a historical bend. It imagines a world where whites are enslaved by black people. Officials say the movie director, Dale Rastegini, was inspired by his disgust in the rise of white supremacy in parts of the U.S. in the last few years. To push back on the surge, he created what officials say is a mind-bending alternative history project. But analysts say the word cracker is an offensive term that could undermine the message the movie attempts to send across to those who want to see it. For more on the movie, I reach Hakim Kai Kazim, lead actor of the film.
So tell me a little bit about this movie and what inspired it, The Cracker.
It's a TV, it's a pilot, sort of a pilot idea for a TV series. So it's a short movie, actually. And it was inspired, I suppose, from the from the whole Black Lives Matter sort of movement and the advent of Trump and Trumpism. And I think it came through that sort of feeling of people not understanding what it was like as an African American or a person of color and how society would reflect and treat you. And so what we try to do was reverse that whole sort of ideology and put the others in the shoes of those other others that they had looked at, and it makes it very powerful. It makes it very poignant when people see it from that point of view, because unless you see yourself reflected, sometimes there's a distance, you have a distance from it, unless it's you see yourself reflected in those images. And people, that it really made a significant imprint on people. So it was really inspired by that whole sort of couple of years of the murder of George Floyd and the Black Lives Matter movement and that sort of thing.
Well, Hakim, why the name Cracker, though? Why that name?
Cracker is, cracker. It's the Caucasian equivalent of the N-word, I think. You know what I mean? And that's why the name came. That's why that name. And it was really also to have an impact. To have that impact. I know there was chat about, oh, maybe the name was too harsh and should we change the name? But I think we really wanted to give make it significant and really have an impact, so people go, exactly what you say, why that name? How dare they sort of put that name out there and use it in this sort of way? But it's the same way as people have used the N-word for years and years and years, and so it's just a reversal again of that whole thing.
But Hakim, look at it this way: wouldn't some people find it disparaging and perhaps racist in itself, and could be seen as offensive to some people?
People have found it offensive and racist as well, but it's not really meant to sort of be offensive and racist in that sort of sense. It's really holding a mirror up to nature. You know, it's really saying, you know, for too long, there are many people that have dismissed the idea and said, you know, maybe you've got a chip on your shoulder, or maybe it's, you know, that slavery is over, or we're not that bad, or it's not, you know, whatever these things that people have said. And this is really to sort of say, well, let's put you in those exactly those shoes. And then that's why the response is given just very strong responses to it. And you're right, some people do find it offensive and racist. It's not meant to be offensive and racist. It really is meant to show you what it would be like if the shoe were on the other foot. And that's what it's trying to say, really. And so therefore, have some empathy from an understanding of your humanity, because if the roles were reversed, that is how painful these things are. So if you're finding it painful just watching those images, just because you see the role reversed, if you're finding it racist just watching that and just hearing the name, then imagine what it's like the other way around. You've only been put in that situation for 5 minutes by watching it on screen. So imagine what it's like to live that way.
So Hakim, as the lead actor of Cracker, what attracted you to this project?
Basically everything I've just said. It was really a chance to really, you know, I love the idea. I love the fact that, you know, we were reversing, sort of in a way, sort of reversing history. I love the idea of really trying to make people understand what it would be like to have history flipped on its head in that sort of sense. And and I just think the power of the message, you know, that was the main thing for me, was the power of the message. And it's a very intense and very powerful message, which I hope makes people really look at themselves, you know, those that have racial sort of or racist tendencies, to look at themselves and to sort of, you know, just empathize a bit more.
Well, particularly with racial and religious tensions, not only here in America, but the rest of the world or in parts of the world, do you think this message will zoom into its intended target or to the rest of the world?
Well, you know, one hopes so, but, you know, you never know unless you put it out there. So, you know, one hopes that it does. And I'm sure, some of the feedback we've got has been very much from its intended target audience on both ends of the spectrum. So, yeah, I think the message does reach out there and people will see it. Some people will see it and word of mouth gets it around and all that sort of thing. So it's meant to be what it is, which is deliberately sort of in your face.
Before you go, Hakim, what is your message to the people around the world who would go to watch this movie?
Message to the, you know, go watch it and understand where it's coming from. You know, understand it's the poignancy of the message that it's telling, which is, you know, that we are, after all, one humanity. You know, we are one human race. You know, we may be different culturally and racially, but we are still one humanity with the same feelings and wants and needs as anybody else.
Hakim Kai Kazim is the lead actor in a newly released movie, Cracker. He spoke with me via Skype from the Czech Republic's capital, Prague. Is a major player in Zimbabwe's economy, as in many other African countries, with investments ranging from construction to agriculture and mining. Chinese mining projects in the country center on gold, chrome ore, diamonds, coal, and other minerals. But Beijing's interest in Zimbabwe is not without controversy. The Zimbabwe Environmental Law Association has published a study chronicling what it says are widespread abuses of locals by Chinese mining firms in the country. For VOA, Adi Gondo has more on the story from Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
The book entitled The Handbook of Zimbabwe-China Economic Relations narrates allegations of human rights violations by Chinese mining companies throughout the country. Their behavior has brought allegations of violence against employees, the non-payment of wages, denial of leave for bereavement, family emergencies and illness, a dependence on limited duration contracts for workers and unfair dismissals without following due legal process. The study also details gender-based discrimination against women through the denial of maternity leave and lesser pay than men for doing similar work. And the book spotlights areas such as Mutoko and Shawane, where mine workers are working under hazardous conditions. Observers say the abuses documented by Zimbabwe Environmental Lawyers Association are credible given its track record of assisting communities in several court cases involving Chinese mining firms, and say it is time for the government to rein in firms cited in the new publication. They further charge that the government is ignoring conspicuous violations of corruption in China's business practices. Farai Magu, the executive director at the Center for Natural Resource Governance, says the situation is exacerbated by impunity and a lack of transparency in China's business transactions and investments.
Because government never tells the people what they've agreed with the Chinese, who are the Chinese companies they are engaging with, nobody knows. All people see are the Chinese coming to the village and threatening to displace them and also destroying their environment.
Observers say Zimbabwean authorities enable Chinese aggressive business practices and its alleged lack of regard for human rights, labor laws, and environmental protection. Magu says the government must clamp down on Beijing's behavior.
So one is left with an impression that there is something which the government tells the Chinese when they engage them about the Zimbabwean people, that they don't matter, that you can go and take their land, you can go and pollute, and we are going to protect you when the people try to resist you. Therefore, whilst we condemn in the strongest terms the violation of the rights of the people of Zimbabwe by the Chinese, the biggest culprit is the government of Zimbabwe, because they swear on oath that they are taking office to uphold the constitution of Zimbabwe and defend the Zimbabwean people.
Magu says that the government responds only when communities mobilize and resist, though authorities often only intervene to defend their guests. In Matabeleland, as in other parts of the country, the situation is no different. Tumisani Nkomo is the coordinator of the faith-based Habakkuk Trust working in rural southwestern region.
Yes, generally it has been noted through empirical analysis that most Chinese companies take very scant regard to the environment. If you look in some places in the Midlands, in Matabeleland, some parts of Mashonaland and Manicaland, there's been a lot of land degradation as a result of Chinese mining companies. Secondly, it's been also the violation of things such as labor rights.
Magu and other observers say that the government is mortgaging national resources to the Chinese for loans and infrastructure support. They say authorities are desperate for international trading partners, but are paying a heavy price of accepting investments that leave locals landless. The government on its part refers to China as an all-weather friend, whose support for the country goes back decades to the era of liberation through the period of Western economic sanctions. Those penalties, which are still in place, were imposed by the West for human rights abuses, attacks on democratic governance, and the confiscation of wide-owned commercial farmland without compensation by the government of the late President Robert Mugabe. Zimbabwe's press quotes China's ambassador to Harare saying that Beijing's cooperation with the Southern African country is unstoppable, and that allegations against his business practices in Zimbabwe are, in his words, fake news. But the Zimbabwe Environmental Law Association and other independent organizations say that's not true, and that they have the documentation to prove it. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
And I pray, say, may nobody quench this fire. There's so many things that I wish tonight, yeah. And I want to know if you want to wait till the morning. She said yes to me. She told me, say she no go lie to me. She told me, say she no go try to see me. She told me, say she no go try to see me. Oh, I see what. Money, let nobody die, see what. Say the money, they my mind. But my love for you pass this life for. Oh, whoa, whoa. Why not till morning, no? Whoa, 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 yeah. I've been needing your love in the popo, popo. Yeah, popo, popo, popo. Girl, show your mercy, girl, on me, so, whoa, whoa, yeah. I've been needing.
say nobody make a move like that. She said she want it from the night to the morning. I'm holding you face down when I push down back. Say I they give you what you need and you know it. Ain't nobody touch like that. She said nobody give her loving like that. She said she want me tonight, that's fair. She said yes to me. She told me, said you don't go lie to me. She told me, say she no go try cause see me. She told me, say she no go try cause see me. Oh, I see what. Money, let nobody toss you out. Say the money, they my mind. But my love for you, pass this life for oh, whoa, whoa. Why not till morning, no, yeah. Whoa, 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 whoa. Yeah. I've been needing your love in the pop, 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 pop. Yeah, pop, 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 pop. Girl, show your mercy, girl, on me, so, whoa, whoa. Hola, let's talk sex with it more time. I guarantee you're gonna feel all nice. I never knew you could do it like that. Like two peas in a pod, that's right. Counting all of my blessings. See, I got you for my life, they make me thank God. Every day you came into my life. Make all of them go, baby, please, baby. Oh, oh, you know I'll be one call away. You got me to on, I want some. You got to be burn it up, up. Take it all. I wanna hear you say my name. Girl, show your mercy, girl, on me, so, whoa, whoa, yeah. I've been needing your love, you know, pop, 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 pop. Check up, pop, 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 pop.
I'm kushkunja miguu mikono hadi kichwa kiufupi mazima nikiamini wakufa kuzikana yani hoi sio nafu mututi kabisa tamashaka sina kiamini tatengwa na Maulana uvumilivu la mbivu nimengoja mpaka sikoza nambulia maumivu ingani sina kuniposa sijui yangu stamilivu kunyenyekea kwa niposa na pambania utulivu mwezangu chuki unaikoza siku kufuta tumachosa likulia ilia na wewe sambona nilipa majonzi yani stressi mapombe mwelewe wendo angu Yesu mkombozi sambona Petro unaniacha mwenyewe mikose usingisi na njozi ndo furai okesa sunataka nitukanwe
ongeza ongeza bado nitharilike ongeza ongeza bado nikose pa kuificha sura
ongeza
chukua mpoko mazetiki wasikani uo msemu minakata mana jua linapondaza nusina fadhali ni kwangu ni mabala oh, oh, oh. Na jitaji kumsinga mwani ila sumo na nikata oh, oh. Penzi la tusi la kibatali anaya mwaka mafutata kutuwa ni furuku nani furuku shani apaka hiki ronya ni umayani kwa nini sato na gomba na switi oh, jema gaini nambie labda nitende kipi atapa kucheka hani kati utani unapani naelewa riziki mafungu saba na lakwangu sita naelewa sikutoshi labda kukurizisha siku kufuta tumachosi ikulia ilia na wewe sambona nilipa majonzi yani stressi mapombe mwenyewe wendo angu Yesu mkombozi sambona Petro unaniacha mwenyewe nikose usingisi na njozi ndo furai okesa sunataka nitukanwe
ongeza ongeza bado
nidhani nike
ongeza ongeza bado
nikose pa kuificha sura
that was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor William Eagle, reporter Douglas Impuga, and producer Saida Hamdoun, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, any wealth that takes only a market week to acquire is sure to contain in it things for which the gods will surely come to make claims. I'm your host, Peter Clotet in Washington. Good evening, Africa.